Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm guest host Victoria Thorpe, filling in for Joseph Pache and David Onick. If you live in the Bay Area, chances are you've experienced the impact of the rise of technology companies and technology workers in the region over the past 5 years. From increased traffic to soaring home prices and higher rents, much media and policy attention has focused on the negative consequences of this demographic and business shift. But while these issues are real, there's another story that's often overlooked about how tech expertise is being tapped to address deep-seated municipal and social challenges in the Bay Area. While tech workers are often portrayed as self-centered young people who are more interested in building an app than helping their neighbors, the reality is more complex. Among the IPO-hungry entrepreneurs, there are also many tech workers who are interested in honing their skills and knowledge to make a positive difference in their communities. Tonight on City Visions, we'll meet some local leaders who are drawing on tech expertise to address real challenges in the Bay Area, such as distribution of food stamps and homelessness. Here in the KELW studio, we have three guests. Catherine Bracey is Director of Community Organizing at Code for America, a San Francisco-based nonprofit organization that helps residents and governments harness technology to solve community problems. She previously worked as a product manager and director of the Obama campaign's technology field office in San Francisco. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Jake Solomon is a product manager and researcher who is working with Code for America to make social services more effective using web technologies. In 2013, he was a Code for America fellow with the San Francisco Human Services Agency, where he focused on reducing churn in the CalFresh food stamps program. Jake previously worked at the Rand Corporation and at Palantir Technologies. Welcome, Jake.
Thanks.
Rose Broom is the founder and CEO of HandUp, a charitable giving platform that provides donors with a new, simple, and direct way to impact the lives of their homeless neighbors and other low-income locals. Previously, Rose served as COO at Super Better Labs and as the data manager for Barack Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. Welcome, Rose.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone is Clara Brenner, the CEO and co-founder of Tummel, a nonprofit urban ventures accelerator based in San Francisco with a mission to empower entrepreneurs to solve urban problems. In January 2014, Forbes listed Clara as one of its 30 under 30 for social entrepreneurship. Welcome, Clara.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you all for being part of City Visions Radio tonight as we explore the ways that technology is being used to solve social and municipal challenges in the Bay Area and across the country. About midway through our show, we'll start taking calls from our listeners. But if you have a question now about how tech can help address challenges in San Francisco, please send us an email at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a question on the City Visions page at kalw.org or on our Facebook page. All right. Well, thank you all for coming in tonight. We're looking forward to an interesting conversation. We have two really interesting organizations here and two people who've been part of those two organizations. So I want to start at the organizational level and hear a little bit more about Code for America and Tummel, which are both taking very different approaches to this whole way of kind of engaging technology to solve and address problems. I want to start with you, Catherine, and if you could just explain to us a little bit more about Code for America, what your mission is, how you came about, and what you're sort of about as an organization and some examples of the ways that you've engaged technology.
Yeah, so our mission is to build governments that work for the people, by the people, in the 21st century. And that means really taking the powerful lessons of the internet and network technologies and bringing them to bear on public problems. And anyone who was following the healthcare.gov story knows that helping government utilize technology better is not just an end in and of itself, but it really helps. If government can't do technology well in the 21st century, it can't implement policy well. And so we really think it's important to work with government to help them develop solutions to existing problems with a new tool set, a digital network tool set. And we try to bring technologists into that process of really looking at the problems that government is facing and bringing their brains to bear on fixing those problems instead of trying to build solutions that root around those problems.
So you're focused on cities in particular.
Local governments.
Local governments. Okay. And why don't you explain to the listeners the different ways that Code for America goes about that? You have a fellowship program and you have some other ways that you do that.
Yeah. We have a fellowship program. Jake, who we'll hear from later, was one of our fellows last year, as you said. And the tool that he and his team built in San Francisco is really indicative of the work that the fellowship teams do. He will probably speak more to this later, but they built a really amazing app that instead of sending a letter from HSA to food stamp clients telling them that there was something wrong with their benefits and they were going to get canceled, a letter that is, you know, if any normal person received it in the mail, might think it was junk mail, or just even if they opened it, wouldn't know how to make heads or tails of what to do with it. And they said, instead of sending them that letter, why don't we text message them a really simple message that says, there's a problem with your benefits, call this number to figure it out. And that, you know, not really surprisingly to us, turned out to be an easier way for people to interact with their food stamp benefits and the people who were administering them than getting this incomprehensible letter in the mail. And that led to the Human Services Agency realizing that all of their interactions with clients could be better. And so they invested in an innovation lab inside the agency to say, not just what tools can we do, but can we incorporate, but how do we look at the experience that our clients have with this agency and make it as simple and beautiful and easy to use as possible, and to really treat citizens with dignity and respect?
Okay, great. And so that's through your fellowship program. And so we'll come back to a lot more questions about Code for America. Claire, I'd like you to explain to the listeners a little bit about Tummel, because you all take a slightly different approach.
Yeah. So Tummel is an urban ventures accelerator, and our mission is to empower entrepreneurs to solve community problems in cities. We're structured as a nonprofit, and we work with urban innovators. So those are folks like WorkHands, which is a blue-collar LinkedIn-type service, or HandUp. You'll hear from Rose in a second, but basically, you know, as you mentioned, they're a crowdfunding platform for the homeless. We have a really structured program where basically we invite super early stage companies from around the country into our offices for about 4 months at a time. And we provide them with really hands-on support and seed funding and services to help grow their businesses and make a real impact on our cities. I guess you could say our basic theory of change is that, you know, government has so much on its plate at this point. And, you know, just in light of the fiscal climate that we're in, they can't provide all of those quality of life services and amenities that we really expect living in cities. And so we think it's really important to start activating members of the community to start thinking about solving their own problems through entrepreneurship.
And so Tummel is a nonprofit organization, but if I understand correctly, most of the organizations that you bring into your accelerator program are for-profit. Is that right?
I guess you could say we think that entrepreneurs, all different kinds of entrepreneurs, have the ability to build scalable, high-growth solutions that you know, meet or address all kinds of problems. And, you know, we believe that same approach should be taken to solving social problems.
Okay. Okay, great. And just so so we don't get into too much of the jargon, just quickly explain what an accelerator is in the world of venture capital.
So an accelerator could be both for-profit or non-profit, but they're basically structured to provide resources. It could be capital, it could be, you know, technical support, it could be mentorship to companies. Some accelerators are out there focused on very specific industry verticals like a Code for America or a Tummel, and there are some that are much more sort of broad-based in terms of their focus. Folks may have heard of like a Y Combinator, for example. So they really run the gamut in terms of their themes, but the basic premise is that they're providing resources to entrepreneurs.
Okay. Great. So I want to turn to Jake and Rose now and hear how you all have come into this sort of new field of tech entrepreneurship with an eye towards solving social and municipal problems. And particularly, and Catherine and Rose, or Catherine and Claire both touched on this, how Tummel and Code for America have been part of your journeys. But why don't we start with you, Jake, if that's okay. Catherine started telling a little bit about what you did, but it's an interesting story.
Well, I was a fellow last year, so it was a one-year fellowship. We're basically thrown into, and I mean thrown into in a really positive way, teams of three and cities of about three, and then we're told to solve some important problem with no guidance or structure, and it's the most exciting, it's an immense opportunity to do self-driven, meaningful work. So the project we ended up focusing on was called Promptly, and about 6 or 7 months into our fellowship, we found ourselves on the phone with a woman who had just learned that her food stamps case had been closed. And the way she learned was that she was at the grocery store. She had a full cart of groceries. It was the first of the month. She went through the checkout process. They scanned all her items. And it was only at the very last stage of this process that they tried to scan her EBT card. This is like her food stamps credit card. And it turned out that her balance was zero. So she had to leave without any groceries, walked outside, called the agency to figure out what was going on. And it turned out that she had missed a piece of paperwork about 10 days before. So that was the problem we decided to address. We discovered that problem happens about 1,000 times in San Francisco every month. And we thought we could put a big dent in that problem with a single text message. So that was our focus. Fundamentally, it wasn't a technology problem. It was a human problem.
And that's what you called Promptly? That was just the sort of name for the program you put together? Or Promptly was the bigger umbrella of...
Promptly was just a small name for a small application that sends one text message to the right person at the right time.
And were you able to get it created?
Yeah. So the tech was a small part. So we got it created. The larger barriers were integrating it with the state-level case management data system, of which there are three in California, and over $1 billion has been spent on building them. Then we had to work with the city attorney's office to figure out how to send messages to clients with private information over means that's not encrypted. Those were the bigger challenges, the organizational change pieces.
And if you wouldn't, on the City Visions website, there we have a link to a great blog post that you wrote about your experience as a fellow, and our listeners can look at that later. But I think you had some interesting insights about what it was really like to understand this sort of come into an agency like the Human Service Agency with a user experience kind of point of view. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that and maybe bring in a little bit of what your professional background was before.
Yeah. So the San Francisco Human Service Agency hit its 100th birthday about a month before our fellowship ended. And every week, the agency grows a little... it evolves over time. So anytime something goes wrong, they make a small addition to a form or to a process. And this happens at every level of government, I think. And so over time, the user experience of these government services, they grow, and they grow in complexity. And when we went back down to the fundamental level of, like, we are going to sit down and enroll in every one of these services ourselves, which took immense partnership with the agency because they chose to let us do this, like come onto the inside into the system. And it was when we took that perspective that we started seeing literally dozens and dozens of opportunities of little pain points where we can improve the user experience of government services.
And I know this is either in your blog post or you might have shared it with me. How many screens did it take you to enroll, I think, in the food stamps program?
Well, the main online way to enroll in food stamps and other public benefits in California is called My Benefits CalWin. I encourage everyone listening to go through it themselves. It depends on how many family members you have, but it can take about 50 screens, 200 plus questions. It asks you if you and your family members are felons about 10 times. And then by the time you get to the end, it's not always so obvious that you want to continue interacting with the system that you just enrolled in.
Yeah, and contrast that with, signing up for Facebook or Twitter or something where there are actual user... that whole sort of user experience way of thinking about how something goes.
Yeah, one is trying to invite you in and one is trying to keep you out in many ways.
Yeah, yeah. Although that their charter is to, to distribute this federal,
As a community, we can do better. We can open that door.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. We'll come back more to your story, Jake. I want to turn to you now, Rose. And you have an interesting story, too, about how Hand Up came to be. So I'd love to hear from you about that.
Sure. So I had an experience a couple of winters ago where I was walking down the street and, every day in San Francisco, we pass homeless people on the sidewalks, and it was a really cold night. And San Francisco is often cold at night, but not so cold that you need gloves. This is one of those gloves nights. And I saw a woman sleeping on the sidewalk, and something about that sight that night really, really hit me. And I thought to myself, why? In a society with so many resources, so much new technology and innovation, and so much compassion in our society, why we haven't developed more solutions to this problem. And I asked myself, why can I pull my phone out? I can order an Uber, I can order food, but I can't do something right here, right now to help this woman. And I started brainstorming what that would look like with a friend of mine, Zach, who's an engineer. And he said, why don't you get it set up and I'll build it for you. And so we said, okay, so we embarked on a side project, Zach and a few other folks, and kind of came together and started working on it. And that's when I bumped into Julie and Clara at Tummel. And they had invited us into the program, and we took a side project into something that we launched within the program.
And so you are now a fully fledged company. Is that accurate to say?
We are, yep. Yeah. Right. We incorporated while we were in the Tummel program.
And you're a specific kind of company that not all our listeners might have heard of before. It's a benefit corporation. So why don't you explain a little bit about what that is?
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, when we were going to incorporate, we thought, you know, what would be the best entity to help us get this off the ground, grow, and have the biggest impact possible in our country? And, you know, we thought about a nonprofit. You know, we obviously have a very strong social mission at HandUp. And we also thought about being a for-profit because the opportunities to grow as a for-profit are a lot clearer in the early stages as a for-profit. And we ultimately decided with a new kind of entity called a public benefit corporation, which is a new kind of entity. It's passed in about 24 states, and it lets you raise money and grow like a for-profit, but it has a social mission baked into the founding document, so you have a legally binding social mission. And we see that as the best of both worlds.
And just as a small plug for City Visions, we did a show about benefit corporations last year. We'll put a link to that on our show too, on our website too. But so have you found, you have to partner, I would imagine, with a lot of nonprofit agencies in order to do your work. You have to connect with homeless people. You have to find a way for the money to get to them. That's much more than what technology platform can't do, all of those pieces. So have you found being a benefit corporation helpful for those partnerships? Is that something that helps for kind of establishing your credibility or your integrity in your work?
You know, I think for us, it's good that everyone has clarity that our social mission is a priority for our company. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to be honest, a lot of human service organizations that we partner with are equally comfortable using for-profit technology and nonprofit technology as well. So, for example, a lot of organizations will use Kickstarter or GoFundMe to post campaigns for individual clients that they're working with. Those systems don't have a back-end tool for the nonprofit that helps them organize. You know, often they're serving hundreds or thousands of people. So HandUp is designed specifically for this use case.
Okay. And how, since our listeners might be asking this question, how do you all make money then?
Yeah. So, you know, HandUp is a crowdfunding site. And when donors come to our website, they can read stories of different people in the community who are asking for help for different needs. It could be help with a security deposit, help with food, medical expenses. It's very broad, the uses. And so, you know, if you come to our site and you want to help, one of our members, Janelle, she's a single mom, and she's going through school and working, and she did a fun campaign on HandUp for a laptop. And if you come in as a donor and you want to donate $50 to her campaign, all of the $50 will go toward her laptop, but the donor can choose to opt in a support fee that comes to HandUp. And most donors do. About 80 to 90% of our donors opt in the support fee. So that way we're not taking an automatic cut. We're letting donors make the choice if they want to support us.
Okay. And that's a common practice in a lot of technology companies where there's sort of this opt-in.
Yeah, I'd call it a new trend in charitable giving. Mm-hmm. So Kiva does something like that. Donors Choose does something like that as well.
Okay, great. And just quickly, do you feel like you would be your fully-fledged company selves without Tummel? Do you feel like that was sort of essential for your, you know, to get where you are now?
It was absolutely essential. I mean, when we started working on HandUp, we were thinking of it as a side project, not something that we would do full-time. And it was partly because of the response from nonprofits all over the country and all over the world actually reaching out to us saying, you know, we have this idea, we've been wanting this technology, but also just having the support structure of going through an incubator program, which is, you know, like a home for little baby startups. And it was, they were very supportive, both personally, but also in terms of their curriculum and the funding. You know, when you are doing a company from scratch, you don't have money. And just like a lot of other people are wondering how to make ends meet, entrepreneurs have those same concerns as well.
Great. Okay. I think that's important for people to understand how important these sort of support structures are. to really foster this entrepreneurial sort of technology effort. So I'm going to bring in the skeptical voice here. We may as well just get it out there. So, you know, my skeptical voice is saying that the problems that are being created in the Bay Area and a lot of cities by, you know, influx of wealthier young workers and rising home prices and the wage gap, poverty, that these nice, you know, little technology, I don't mean this in real life, but these nice technology efforts are just never going to scale to really get to the heart of what needs to happen. So I'm wondering, this is probably a question all of you have gotten at some point or another, and Claire, I hope you're hearing this too, because I want to direct this to you too. Just, you know, how do you answer that skeptical voice about the role of technology and technology entrepreneurship to address these bigger problems? Maybe we'll start with Catherine.
Well, I think I speak for a lot of people at Code for America, and I say that we are also very humble about the role that technology can play in solving social problems. We know that it's not actually the tool itself that is going to drive the solution, but that the tool is a vehicle for us to understand more about the problem and to identify places where we can actually make a difference. So, you know, as Jake is doing a lot of great work on access to benefits like Medi-Cal and CalFresh, we're not going to solve, you know, we're not going to get everyone off of those benefits. We're not going to raise everyone's economic level to the place that we would all like it to be strictly through technology. But what we're really doing, and really the power of Code for America, is that we're creating spaces where people who have skills but don't necessarily understand the problem set can meet up with people who really are experiencing an urgent need but don't have access to the skills. And hopefully there's some transfer of knowledge there, right? And that it is not just delivery of a tool or service to a community member, but it's also building a relationship between people that wouldn't necessarily have a relationship otherwise. The person without the tech skills maybe picks up some tech skills. The person who has the person with the urgent need picks up some tech skills. The person with the tech skills develops some empathy, and our communities are stronger because of that interaction. The piece of technology that comes out the other end is really just the physical manifestation, the tangible thing that we can hold on to that really demonstrates the power of that relationship building.
So it's breaking down that sort of us versus them mentality.
Exactly. And we have found over and over again that when you put people in the same room together who you think would be really at odds, and you focus them on driving towards a solution to a shared problem, the conversation changes immediately. You know, governments aren't super excited to have a bunch of technologists coming in and digging around. But once you show them the potential of a new tool to help, you know, change the way that they deliver services, and I should say that most government officials really want to do a better job at delivering services, the conversation changes immediately. And it's the same when you put, you know, techie members of our Citizen Volunteer Brigade, and we have about 100 across the country, one very active in San Francisco, in the same room with a housing advocate, and they start talking about, you know, the data that the city has that they can use to build tools to help empower residents who are getting evicted. You know, the conversation changes, the relationship gets stronger, and trust is built.
I think that's really powerful to put a lot of things in motion. And Jake, maybe you could just share a little bit about what that sort of first level of trying to interact was like at the Human Services Agency. I mean, did you have to go through a long trust building process? And coming out the other side, I think you're still doing work with them. Do you feel like, you know, that there's sort of a momentum that you feel like you can build towards to kind of see chip away at that bigger impact question?
We felt a tremendous... So one of the benefits of being in the fellowship program is that Code for America does a lot of that work before you even show up. So the cities who are most excited about using modern web technologies to improve their service delivery, they're the ones who walk into the door in the first place. They go through a couple months of kind of training and negotiation with the organization before the fellows even walk in the door. So we walked into a group of almost overly excited partners. Their expectations were really high.
Yeah.
And absolutely that momentum has continued. We found that ultimately our biggest impact was probably just sitting there and asking people what they thought we should do. Mm-hmm. And it was in those conversations that people who were already doing this work, they spoke up, and all we had to do was kind of elevate the work and the interest that was already there.
And I would imagine there would sort of maybe this wellspring of ideas that no one's had a chance to even implement. There's no resources. There aren't people who can kind of think that stuff through for them. So maybe that might have been really exciting for
them.
And
it turns out when those people find each other within a big agency, they can do it themselves.
Yes. And empowering them and giving them those opportunities to do that. Yeah.
Totally.
We have many examples of fellowship teams that come into cities, and because they're there, people who never would have talked to each other inside City Hall are talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, all of a sudden they'll be having a meeting and the fellows are just sitting there.
The meta meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we've just built this relationship between colleagues that probably should have been talking to each other anyway.
Yeah, that's exciting. And it's interesting how little like sort of funding or effort or kind of expertise is required for that, right? Claire, I'd love to turn to you now and maybe get you to answer that skeptic question. I don't mean to take us back to the negative place, but just kind of help us understand how you frame what you're doing to address that bigger impact or sort of larger social ill kind of question that may come up.
Sure. I guess I would start by saying that I think too often we let the perfect get in the way of the good. I think we're just too quick to be critical, especially in the social impact entrepreneurship space. I think at least from my perspective, I think we need to be just generally more supportive of social entrepreneurs and their efforts and the technologies they're looking to employ, and don't undersell them and the potential impact they could have. Because, I don't know, I guess I would just say that, you know, societally, we haven't yet invested the kind of capital and resources we would need in order to see, you know, like a Facebook level of impact or proliferation happen for a social impact company, you know, but we have to start somewhere. And at least at Tumul, we think that, you know, we can provide that first step in the right direction. You know, I would love to see HandUp be the sort of first billion-dollar social impact company. I think it's really important to raise expectations around the space and, you know, hope for the best, which is why we're so excited about working with companies like HandUp or, you know, like a KidAdmit, which is, you know, a common application for preschools, which we supported. It's a fantastic woman-owned or woman-run company that basically came out of one woman's experience trying to get her kids into preschool, which is, you know, in and of itself a very modest objective. But she's now in the last year scaled her technology to, I think she's in something like 35% of all preschools in San Francisco and 9 Bay Area counties. And I think we need to expect more from our social entrepreneurs and drive more resources towards them, and we will see more of an impact.
Great. Okay. I want to keep going on this conversation. I'm just going to take a break to remind everyone that this is City Visions Radio on local public radio, KALW 91.7 in San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. And tonight we're discussing the ways that tech can be used to solve social and municipal challenges in the Bay Area with our guests, Catherine Bracey and Jake Solomon of Code for America, Clara Brenner of Tumul, and Rose Broom of HandUp. Now we invite you, our listeners, to call in with your questions or comments. Are you a tech worker who is interested in making a difference? Do you have ideas for how technology can help your community? The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment on KALW.org or on our Facebook page. So, I wanted just to kind of talk a little bit about some of the, we've talked a little bit about that skeptical voice, but since we have two tech entrepreneurs here or tech experts or expertise, young workers here, I would say I want to crack the code a little bit of the misperception of young tech workers in the Bay Area and the perception of the sort of negative versus what I think is this under sort of this groundspring of interest that there is in making a difference and being involved and doing things that have a social good. And it was interesting, maybe some of you read the New York Times had an article about millennials on Sunday, and I thought they had a great quote. They said, you know, the generation that gave us Occupy Wall Street has embraced its own modes of entrepreneurship, found across the broad spectrum of creatives, from stylists to techies, who reject the presumed security of the corporate job and riskily pursue their own ventures, even if it means working out of their parents' basement. At the same time, record numbers of new college graduates are applying for jobs in the Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, or Teach for America.
And Code for America.
I was going to say, where's Code for America there? Come on, New York Times. So I, you know, and I wonder, you know, have you had family or friends who've said to you, like, why aren't you, you know, you know, Jake, you worked at Palantir. Like, you know, did you leave your first $10 million on the table? Like, you know, what are you doing?
The answer is yes.
Yes, you did. But were you glad to do, I mean, so do you have any, you know, so what, why'd you do that? Why did you decide to move from the, you know, exciting corporate tech world to doing, working for the food stamps, you know, distribution problems?
Well, I think that my mission when I was at Palantir and my mission when I was at RAND is pretty much the same as it's been. And I think that the single biggest opportunity for social impact is at the intersection of government and software. I think software is eating the world, in the words of Mark Andreessen. But also government is the single biggest entity that provides the most important services to those who most need it. And I feel like that those are our two levers for social impact, and I want to be right in the middle of them.
And do you feel like you have to convince people, like there's so many people like me out there, you know, or do you feel, you know, you're an unusual character and amongst your friends and peers?
Aren't you convinced by the opportunity to, like healthcare.gov was a big national headline, but there are healthcare.govs in every single department and every single social service agency in the country. And if you want to have a social impact and you're young and you're able to take risk, I feel like now is the right time.
94% of all government IT projects that cost more than $10 million fail. So they're either delivered late, they're over budget, or they flat out don't work. And Jake mentioned that some of the tools, software technology that it's in use in California to administer benefits costs way more than it should and could be delivering better service. And we feel like if more technologists and entrepreneurs turn their attention to those problems instead of building tools that root around the problems, that we would all together, you know, government is the thing we do together, would be better off.
And do you have a hard time recruiting people who agree with that statement?
We don't, actually. And I think that And I think we saw this with healthcare.gov, too, and on the Obama campaign where I worked on the technology team, that we have a lot of people who have skills that just don't understand the problem set, and they need organizations to help them connect to the problem set. And so we at Code for America want to try to create those spaces.
Okay, great. What about you, Rose? Was this anyone in your sort of peer group said, why are you doing that, homeless people? I mean, come on.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, I heard from my peer group was, this is so awesome. How can we help you? And I think that, you know, there are so many people, so many technologists in the community who want to help, who want to participate and don't always know where to start, especially with kind of human services work. And so, you know, with Hand Up, what we do is help share the stories of people who, you know, might be homeless or might be in transitional housing who need help. We often think of technology as creating barriers between people, but technology also helps bring barriers down. And so we heard from so many people in the community across the country saying, how can we help? How can we participate? All of our the technology platforms that we're built on, Twilio and Stripe, who does all of our credit card processing, both of them sponsored us and support us. We work out of a free office space. Pivotal Labs is another technology development company. So we've seen support on every level. And I think it is important to continue to bring real problems to the technology community, because technologists do ultimately want to solve problems, and it's hard for them to do that when they don't understand what the problems are.
And to even identify the problems. And Claire, what about you? And, you know, you've got to recruit a whole group of people, group of companies to come in for your accelerator program. Is that, are you sort of trawling around trying to find people who are looking to solve social problems, city problems through technology, or is that something where you're oversubscribed?
You know, we're pretty oversubscribed at this point. We have a less than 5% acceptance rate for each of our cohorts. I think it's really important to reemphasize what Rose just mentioned, which is that, you know, people are looking for outlets and resources and ways to get involved, and it's not always clear, especially in the entrepreneurship space. You know, if you want to start the next Twitter, there's a place for you to go to get resources, and there's a place for you to go and get money to really build something meaningful. If you want to work in social entrepreneurship, for the most part, you're going to be pushed in an international focus, which is really, you know, excellent. But, you know, if you want resources or mentorship or support to start solving a problem in your own community or within your own government, like, there really aren't that many tools available, which is why it's so important for organizations like Code for America and Tumul to really raise awareness to make it clear to people who care about these issues, you know, and there are so many of them, you know, that there are resources out there and there are things you can do to make a positive impact on your community, whether it's, you know, donating through a hand-up type platform or, you know, actually thinking about starting a company yourself. And I think, frankly, that's our biggest barrier is just showing the young entrepreneurs, tech-enabled people who live in the Bay Area, that there are ways to get involved. And I think that's a really important thing that we need to talk about.
Well, I think that's a really good point, is that, and you've all brought it up, that it's not a, it's maybe a lack of interest, it's just a lack of understanding and almost sounds like access points, kind of starting points. Well, so I'm going to pose a different question. If you were in charge of running the city government of San Francisco and you wanted to bring in this kind of tech-based way of thinking about solving problems, what would you do? How would you operate things differently? I know that's a huge question, but you could just give me one example or a thought or two.
I would host a Code for America fellowship team last year.
San Francisco is actually doing a really great job at this. They have invested not just in the lab that we mentioned at the Human Services Agency, but there's a new chief data officer. There's a chief innovation officer. They have a sort of innovation fellowship, kind of like the Code for America fellowship, that is embedded in the city itself, so they're running their own kind of innovation fellowship program. So they're doing a lot, and they're really committed to figuring out how to do more, and we're committed to helping them figure it out. And we have a volunteer group, the Code for America Brigade in San Francisco, that works with them. The chief data officer comes to every meeting and is collaborating on projects with volunteer technologists and non-technologists every week. Wednesday nights at 6:30 at Code for America.
There you go. Go ahead and plug that, because that sounds exciting. Rose or Clara, do you have any other thoughts?
I would say that this was one of the great things for us going through Tumul, was how they brought in city officials who were interested in connecting with technologists. Because we, you know, with HandUp, we really see ourselves as one piece of the puzzle. And, you know, we work with nonprofit human service organizations, and we work in partnership with city governments who want to support this type of technology. And most importantly, we work with the community and help give the community a direct, tangible way that they can support people. So I would say more of that.
Mm-hmm. To get the city officials out of the kind of city hall, maybe, and out into the talking to technology companies more directly. Are you going to say something, Jake?
Yeah, I would say I would order in a friendly way every person working in the mayor's office and any high-level department to apply for and enroll in every single service that's under your jurisdiction. Mm. I want to see every mayor in the country apply for their own their food stamps program, their Medi-Cal program. If you run a business permitting department, start a business. I feel like that's the only way. That's one of the primary ways that we can elevate the importance of user experience, is to put the experience, to have the people in charge go through the same experience.
I think that's really powerful to really dig into what you're talking about doing and experience. And, but again, that we were talking about that is that sort of user experience mindset is not necessarily baked into the way governments operate.
Yeah. It's really just developing empathy.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's what everyone really on all sides of these issues needs to do more of.
And put yourself in the shoes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just give – oh, wait, 1 second, Clara. I'm going to just give our station announcement one more time, then I want to turn to you. I want to let everyone know this is City Visions on local public radio 91.7, KALW in San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. And tonight we're discussing the ways that tech can be used to solve social and municipal challenges in the Bay Area with our guests, Catherine Bracey and Jake Solomon of Code for America, Clara Brenner of Tumul, and Rose Broom of HandUp. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners, with any questions or comments about the role of technology in solving challenges in San Francisco. The number to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment at klw.org or on our Facebook page. Claire, I want to go to you next, and then we have a caller from San Francisco we're going to go to. Claire, did you have something you wanted to add there?
Yeah. I guess we get asked a lot, like, what municipalities can do to be more innovative or embrace innovation. And I think they could actually take a page out of something that San Francisco's done a little bit of and obviously could do more of, which is build partnerships with existing sort of consumer brands and companies that have a really strong reach in the community already. And I would point to an example of, I think it was a partnership between San Francisco, Yelp, I think Code for America was also involved, about sort of putting health scores out there and making them more accessible to the public. Like, you walk into a restaurant, no one really pays attention to the health scores, you know, on the door. But the city worked with Code for America and Yelp to actually get those scores onto Yelp's page so that, you know, consumers, when they're looking at restaurants, potentially making, you know, reservations or figuring out where they're going to go out at night, can see those scores. And so I think there's so many ways in which, you know, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. There are so many amazing brands that are out there that are already embedded in the community, and finding effective ways to use them as partners to really communicate with your constituents, I think, would be very productive.
Oh, that's an interesting example. Catherine, do you know if that was a tough sell for Yelp, or is that something they...
No, Yelp was championing it, and actually they've been evangelizing across the country to get other cities to do it. We also worked with the city and Trulia, a housing...
Real
estate company, to get an housing inspection data into housing listings on Trulia as well.
That's great. I think we have a caller from San Francisco. Is Pat there?
Yes.
Did you have a question for our guest tonight, Pat?
I do. Thank you for taking my call. This is a very interesting panel and very knowledgeable guest. I'd like them to comment, if they would, on how technology can be harnessed in their realms to help municipalities and cities deal with this influx of tens of thousands of unaccompanied children coming across the border, because they're not staying in Texas and San Diego. They're being all over the United States, wherever they have family members. And if we don't have yet, we are likely to have some.
Okay.
And I'm sure tech can help us deal with the potential of having all these unexpected children.
Okay, thank you for the call, Pat. So this is a real time. You know, it's nice to be drawn into an ongoing problem that might be sort of hard to solve in a city, but this is a real time issue that's just coming up right now. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about this.
My personal opinion is that that's not a problem at all, and that I would encourage people to first understand the full human experience of applying for and trying to get a valid visa and switching countries. And once we can get that full experience online, then we can start to talk about how to improve it.
Okay.
I mean, I think that this is sort of a larger sort of human services question, too, and how we connect people with the services that they need. And I, you know, I don't think any of us know enough about the issue to speak very intelligently about the ways in which technology can, if it can, actually help the problem, though I'm sure there are some, you know, some ways that data could be shared more effectively between agencies about what services are available, not just for people who are coming here as refugees or whatever, but as, you know, citizens of these regions as well. We're working on another data standard, which is what we did with Trulia and Yelp on, you know, restaurant scores and housing inspections around social service data. And there's a standard, if you call 211 as opposed to 911 or 311, you'll get information about social services in your area. That data is not standardized and accessible in any meaningful way across jurisdictions. And so that is something that we're working on trying to make as easy to access as restaurant inspection scores in Yelp. So that's an example of where social service data could be made more, be put closer to the hands of the people who need it when they need it.
Interesting. So that 211 is a national phone number?
It's not in use everywhere, just like not everywhere has a 311 system, where, you know, which is the non-emergency line, but it's in use many places. We actually worked with San Mateo County last year on the project that sort of identified this as the need and scaled it up into something that we're trying to get adopted across the country in jurisdictions where 211 is a thing. And it's really about getting everyone on board to publish their data in the same format so that it can be brought through these sort of consumer methods to people who need them.
Hmm. Interesting. I don't know, Rose or Claire, if you had any thoughts about the caller's question.
I think Catherine summed it up pretty well.
Okay, great. We were talking before about San Francisco government and the ways that it's trying to bring innovation into its operations and sort of way mindset. And there's San Francisco has another effort to sort of foster the growth of tech companies in the city. And there is something called SF.City. And I just wondered if that's something that you all – that's related to any of the work here. Is that something that people need to know about as another kind of tech operation, or is that something that's more city-driven?
SF City is a nonprofit that helps connect civic organizations with the community. We've, you know, actually Tumble helped connect us with them, and they do some promotion of different tech companies. I know they participated in helping to bring awareness about Ellis Act reform to different tech companies, and I think a few hundred tech CEOs signed on to an initiative that Ron Conway had launched through SF City for Ellis Act reform.
And does that effort, that Ellis Act reform effort, does that feel like the kind of thing that's sort of powerful, a powerful connection between tech and government, or does that sort of feel like a totally separate kind of effort from in your points of view?
I mean, I think that's an example of something where a lot of people care and want to help, don't know exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. And that's a tangible way for people to do something that's going to help bring at least some relief to some of the problems that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts about that effort?
SF City has been doing a great job of organizing tech companies around issues that are relevant to them and to the city, the Ellis Act reform being one of them. So, it's an example of another organization that is giving companies or technologists a way to engage with the system, as Rose said, that they wouldn't have necessarily known how to plug into otherwise.
And I'm not sure of the details, but I think that they participated in setting up the bus, the Muni, next Muni comes in 20 minutes tickers on the bus stalls, that was something that they...
Oh, the next bus or whatever that's called. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. At the bus stop in the city, you're not really sure when the next one's going to come. And now there are these displays. And I'm pretty sure that was something that SF City helped.
Okay. So I just wanted to surface that because it's another kind of organization that sort of comes up in this whole conversation about technology. I wondered if we could look a little bit towards the future and think about if you all, everyone in this conversation was successful at sort of raising up, whether it's increasing, in Tumble's case, the number of companies that are out there kind of tackling social problems, or in Code for America's case, really connecting technologists and government more effectively. 10 years from now, what could we could start with San Francisco, or you could choose another city that you've been working with. What could be different? Anyone could jump in. I don't know if anyone wants to start.
What I would like to see is some acknowledgement, some sense from any citizen, whether they're a technologist or not, that they know that there is a productive way they can plug into building a better, stronger, healthier community, that they see a need or a problem in where they live, and they know that there's a channel through which they can try and build, contribute to building a solution. And I think we see the opposite of that in, there are a lot of historical causes and root causes here, but in Ferguson, what we see is citizens who feel like their government is not responsive to their needs, that they have no channel for voicing concerns and having government respond to them in a meaningful way. And we want people to feel like there is a way they can build a better, stronger, healthier society, government that is responsive to their needs without needing to take to the streets. And that should be the last resort. So let's build some other ways that people can participate in building government.
And just to come back to sort of what you said at the beginning, this sort of kind of continual connection of technologists and city government and seeing the real tangible problem solving that can come out of that to you is the way to sort of start to build that credibility.
Yeah, and Jake said, government still is the most important, largest, forceful lever for social change in the world. And we need to get it right if we're going to have strong and healthy democracies. And we need to put our collective efforts behind building more responsive government, more collaborative government, more innovative government that works for everybody.
And maybe just to make it super clear, because you alluded to this, but just explain a little bit about what those brigades are, because I think that's a very tangible way to understand Code for America's kind of agenda in that way.
Yeah, the brigades, I like to call them collision venues. They're they're volunteer organizations. We have about 80 to 100 chapters across the U.S., and we have some international partners as well. They meet on a consistent basis to talk about problems that are facing the community and then design solutions. So it's a mix of technologists, designers, city officials, and just residents who have a vested interest in a cause or an issue that they want to see get fixed, and then, you know, issue area experts who can kind of advise on where the problem space really is. And they build things together, but as important as that, they build relationships, and they collaborate, and they take a shared sense of ownership over the place that they live and develop accountability. You know, they're sitting side by side with city officials saying, well, why does this work the way that it does? And, okay, that's the answer. Is there a way that we can help you, you know, get access to that data or publish this in a better way? Or why are you doing it this way and not that way? And just through that act of having the conversation, your attitude about the place where you live and your agency in the place where you live really changes. So we support those groups. We have brigades in San Jose, in Oakland, and in San Francisco. If you wanted to hit all of them, Oakland is on Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights is San Francisco, and Thursday nights is San Jose. You can find more at codeforamerica.org.
Great. And just one quick other thing, just give us an example, if you can, in one of those three places of A things that they've decided to work on, just so we get a little bit more concrete.
Yeah. In San Francisco, they are working on a project called Local Free Web, which will allow you to, they're going to put up signs, posters at bus stops, and allow you to text into a short code and receive the location of the nearest place that has free internet access. They started out with trying to understand why more people in lower income brackets weren't taking advantage of sharing economy companies, and realized that they don't necessarily have access to the same level of technology that others might, right? And that's a key problem. And so, okay, well, how do we get them? So then let's pivot away from the sharing economy problem. How do we get them closer to the internet? So why don't we meet them where they are? 90% of people have cell phones that at least have text message capability, and put signage up where we know where they're going to see it, at bus stops and in public spaces where they may be looking for internet access, and help them locate the closest place that they can access the internet.
I think that's really powerful, because I can kind of hear maybe these technologists saying, like, why are more people not using TaskRabbit to make extra money?
Exactly.
And they don't realize that they're like 10,000 feet above where the problem actually is. And great question to ask, but you got to dial back.
You got to start somewhere. Yeah. And it's, you know, the brigade is a safe space to ask that question and then get redirected to where, you know, your resources and time is better spent. And then those technologists develop some empathy for the people who don't have a smartphone and have to access services a different way.
Great. Claire, I want to bring you in, just to ask you that question, sort of the 10-year down the road vision.
Sure. I guess 10 years from now, from Tummel's perspective, you know, we want to see a real proliferation of urban impact entrepreneurship. You know, we want to see social impact entrepreneurs solving real community problems in cities, so that, you know, when a young person thinks about becoming an entrepreneur, it's just as appealing to start the next Hand Up as it is to start the next Facebook. You know, we want to see a lot of these intractable problems that, you know, maybe have been identified by municipalities and by the community as real priorities, starting to get addressed, and feeling like there's some movement. You know, issues like homelessness, or implementing universal preschool, or, you know, making sure that we employ local tradespeople for, you know, the major construction projects that happen, you know, within our borders. You know, we really want to see entrepreneurs making a difference on those issues.
Great, and it's an exciting vision. Jake, did you want to add anything from your point of view about what would look different 10 years from now?
Sure. I mentioned that I think that software and government are the two biggest levers for social impact, and my personal mission right now is to build and ship digital services that elevate the rights of the poor and empower the people who are working to empower those individuals already.
So to make sure that the sort of the point of view of that population is really integrated into how we think about things.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Rose?
I guess I would add to this that, you know, it's not a new thing to see technology that's making a positive impact in society. I mean, even the radio technology we're using right now is technology. Medical equipment is technology. Cell phones, our basic communication infrastructure, is technology. And I think right now with, you know, a return to urban areas that we're seeing, with the displacement that we're seeing, I think there's become this kind of polarized view, this sort of framing of technology. And I think what instead how we should be framing this is seeing technology as a powerful tool, seeing the technology community as an ally, and helping to build more bridges so that we can all get on the same page about what the problems are, what are some practical solutions to those problems, how can we get those solutions built. So, you know, would really love to see in the next 10 years a more changing of the mindset.
And again, breaking down that us versus them. Jake, did you have another word? We have just a couple minutes left. I want to just give everybody a chance to close with any final thoughts. We will start with you, Catherine, since we ended with, or we'll go back to you and we'll start the same order we went at the beginning.
I just want to reinforce what I said earlier about encouraging people who work in the technology industry not to see government as something that we can build tools around, so that we actually have to, this is sort of what's at the root of the Google bus problem, or the issue that a lot of people have with Uber, is that instead of saying public transportation is broken, how do we help fix it? It's let me just build a solution that works for people like me who can afford it. And I really think that we need to do a better job of connecting those people and those ideas to the public problem set.
That's well said. Anybody else want to add any closing thoughts? Clara?
Sure. I think there are so many different ways to get involved. You can, you know, join a brigade. You can start a company of your own. But even just thinking about supporting the companies that are already out there, either by investing in them or simply downloading the app and opening it up and using it, you know, there are lots of people out there that are looking to make a difference in the community. And the best thing you can do to support them is use their tools. So I would encourage anyone that's listening to, you know, take a look at Code for America's website, take a look at tumul.org, see what people are doing, and try and support them in, you know, any little way that you can.
I'm just going to remind everyone, since all these web companies have weird spellings, Tumul is T-U-M-M-L, not T-U-M-M-L-E or whatever, another way you could spell that. There's links to all of your organizations on the KALW website at the City Visions page, so you can, any of our listeners can find that on KALW and find a link to all of your great work. So that's all the time we have tonight. I want to say thank you so much to Catherine Bracey and Jake Solomon of Code for America for being a guest tonight, along with Clara Brenner of Tumul and Rose Broom of HandUp. It was a really interesting conversation. For a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download our podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen, and tonight's show was produced by me with in-studio work by Susie Britton. Thank you, Susie. Next week, you can join host Joseph Pache for a conversation about the future of San Francisco's waterfront. This is Victoria Thorpe for City Visions Radio on KALW San Francisco. Thanks for listening. Good night, and have a great week.